It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We will be taking your calls, your questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. And good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you again.
A brand new year, and you have your State of the Union tonight, and the legislature seems to be moving at a breakneck speed on a bunch of different bills today. Let's start with those.
Sure.
First of all, the transgender bills. We have a transgender bill that just received the second reading approval on the second reading in the Senate, moving pretty quickly through the Senate. Give us your thoughts on the timeline and the speed for which this bill is making it through.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. Historically, the first week of the session is kind of a slow session. Everybody's just getting to know each other. And really, the last 2 years, I would say that has changed. Both the House and the Senate have been really interested in starting quickly, getting people going and taking on some of the bigger and tougher issues. This is one. What I will say is, though, these issues are issues that have come up previously. So during the interim sessions, there were hearings on many of these bills, including the transgender bills. And so I'm not surprised to see those moving forward so quickly. And there was a hearing on this particular bill yesterday, and I thought it was a good hearing. I didn't listen to all of it. I try to catch up at night as much as I can, and I was able to read some of the comments, listen to some of the comments. I thought both the bill sponsor and some of the Democrats who opposed the bill were very articulate in their arguments and their disagreements. And I thought overall it was a very respectful exchange and a good exchange. So I'm excited to see what happens with these bills.
Okay, for listeners who are just tuning in, let's make sure they know what we're talking about. We're talking about Senator Mike Kennedy's bill that would prohibit transgender youth from undergoing gender-affirming surgery and using puberty blockers. And again, that did just receive a key approval. What are your thoughts on the bill itself? You talked about the debate. Will you veto this bill?
Yeah, no, I'm not planning to veto this bill. I've had lots of conversations with the bill sponsor and with others. There are several bills out there around this topic, and I believe this one is the right bill, the one that approaches it in the right way. What he's doing is, and I have to point this out, unfortunately, this is such a charged issue. Such a divisive issue. It's become part of the culture war battle in our state. But what we're seeing is, including in extremely progressive countries in Europe, they are relooking at this issue as well. We don't know what the long-term effects of these surgeries and these medications are on our young people. And I think it's really important that we find out. And that's all Senator Kennedy is doing. Senator Kennedy is a doctor. He treats young people who are going through these procedures. And all he's saying is we're going to push pause. We're going to look at the research. We're going to gather all of the data and make sure we're not doing any long-term harm to our young people. And I think that's a very reasonable approach.
I think one of our texters is asking a key question. They want to know what you plan to do to protect the rights of kids and teens who identify as LGBTQ+. The last few bills, they say, seem to be geared towards limiting their rights.
Sure.
And what do you plan to do to protect their rights?
Yeah, well, it's important. And I talk about this all the time. You'll remember last year, in fact, I issued a five-page written document about why I believed that the legislature was making a mistake. And this is where I hope, and again, we're so caught up in this social battle, and I'm trying to take the emotions out of it. Let's look at the science. Let's look at the research. Let's try to do what is right. And at all times, protecting those who are struggling. And we know that we have vulnerable young people who are struggling. Actually had members of the LGBTQ community, including transgender youth and their parents, come to the mansion. We talked about these issues, trying to get a better understanding of what they're facing. And again, making sure that we're protecting them. And I hope that we can do both of those things.
Such personal, private issues.
For sure.
Are you concerned about the message we're sending?
I'm always concerned about the message. And that was my message. I invited legislators to meet with them as well, so that they can understand the impacts. And I would share this with everyone out there. It just, when you get to know people who are being impacted by these laws, it changes. It changes you. It becomes personal. It's not just some cable news talking point. It's now real people and real struggles. And there are real struggles. And I think it's critical that if you're going to make these decisions, that you actually take time to get to know the people that are being impacted those decisions. And I have to give Senator Kennedy credit, because he has done that and continues to do that. There are some others that have not done that, and I would encourage them to be more thoughtful, to be more kind, to be more engaging, and to keep an open mind, because these conversations might change your mind on some topics that you think you know.
Let's turn to the state of the state.
Yeah.
You're delivering your state of the state tonight. You want to give us a couple of glimpses?
I would love to. And I'm really excited. I know people don't get real pumped up for a 20-minute state of the state address. But
they should, especially when the state's doing so well.
Well, I hope so. And here's a couple things. When the president gives his speech, it's never 20 minutes. So let me just assure you that mine will be much shorter than the one the president gives. And number two, we're doing something really different, something that I don't know if it's ever been done. At least as I've looked back through history, I haven't seen it done. My message is always to legislators, but this time it's going to be to the young people in our state and to the children and grandchildren of our legislators. And in fact, we've invited our legislators to bring their children and grandchildren. And so you're going to see for the first time young people on the floor of the House of Representatives, kids and grandkids, when I'm giving my speech. And that's, I would invite Utahns, not just parents, but this is one where I hope at 6:30 tonight, you'll tune in to KSL or wherever, online, wherever you catch the state of the state. And you'll ask your kids and grandkids to watch with you. I think we have a message. I'm really worried about this next generation, and yet I'm optimistic about this next generation. I believe that Utah is a place where our kids and grandkids will be better off than we are. I still believe in that dream, that Utah dream, that American dream, and I want to talk about that. I want to talk about why we should be optimistic. There will be some nostalgia in there as well for the older folks like me in the room, but I think this will be a speech hopefully the entire family can enjoy.
A lot of talk about children, schools, pay raises for teachers, the per pupil unit, all those things are coming up in the legislature. Also, the school choice bill, which seems to come up every single year, mainly it's been called vouchers or whatever.
Sure.
What has changed this year in your mind when it comes to that bill?
So we've had voucher attempts in the past. Last year, we had a bill that I did not support, a bill that failed. I didn't veto it. A lot of people think I vetoed it. I did not. It actually failed fairly significantly in the House of Representatives. And my argument has always been, look, if we're going to do this, it needs to be an even playing field. We need to make sure that if we want competition, and I have no problem whatsoever with competition. In fact, our schools will do well. We've got some data that shows that over 90%, around 90%, of families, of parents, are happy with their schools right now. You hear all of this pushback, our schools are terrible, things are going poorly, and the data just does not prove that out. Most, again, I can't find 90% of people that agree on anything right now, but 90% of Utahns like their school. And so I have no concerns whatsoever about the competitive piece of this, but it just has to be an equal playing field. And that means we have to pay our teachers enough. That's really important to me, and I've said that. I can't support this bill unless we have a significant pay raise for our teachers. I hope that's coming. It looks like that's coming. We seem to be getting more support. I've been pushing for that. Whether or not there's a voucher bill or a school choice bill, I support significant increases for our teachers. So I'm hoping that will come. I also hope, again, that we can We can allow our schools. We want our schools to compete, and then we put all of these really ridiculous requirements on them that make it harder for them. We say we're holding them accountable, but it's actually having the opposite. Like school grading is a great example of this. We have school grading based on tests, but then we allow parents to opt out of the test. And in many schools, it's the smartest and best students who are opting out of the test, which then lower the school grade. So we have the state requirement to do one thing and a state requirement to opt out of one thing, and we get these ridiculous grades that are absolutely meaningless, and it hurts our schools. So those are the types of things I would like to see change, and I think there's an opportunity to make those things change. And I'm not doing the vote counting, but I'm hearing that they think they have the votes to accomplish it this year, so we'll see what happens.
All right, we need to take a break. We have our callers waiting on the line to ask their questions. Number to call with your question, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And let's go to the phone lines. James is on the line in Provo. Good afternoon, James. What is your question?
Well, good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor. What I wanted to discuss is water levels in the Great Salt Lake, and obviously the recent snows are welcome, as would be more rain, and we hope for that. But I noticed in the paper one suggestion mentioned was cloud seeding, and Governor, has any data been presented to your desk showing how effective cloud seeding might be? I'm just kind of wondering, would it be, you know, cloud seeded in Utah, and it might have inadvertent consequence of helping Colorado with rain?
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on that?
Certainly, James. Thank you. It's great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. So it's interesting. The good news is that we are having the best winter in about 20 years so far. And it looks like we're getting a little break in storms coming up finally. But we're so excited now to have basically we're at about 200% of normal when it comes to the water content in the snow. And in fact, I'm pleased to report that the Great Salt Lake has already risen more than a foot. No one expected that. That was not supposed to happen. That's a really big deal, and is setting us up very well for an incredible spring. But we still have a long ways to go. Now, you specifically mentioned cloud seeding, and it may be a surprise to many listeners, including you, James, to learn that Utah has been cloud seeding since the 1950s. And there is research out there and data out there that shows that it does help, that it does make a difference. How much of a difference is still a little bit unclear. It does not benefit other states. The cloud seeding is a fairly immediate process. You put these particles in the air, and it helps us to extend our storms and to add to our storms. Most of our cloud seeding has been done along the Wasatch Front in the ski resort areas of the state, but we are expanding that this year and doing significantly more. The legislature funds up to about $350,000 annually as a match with local water districts to do some of that cloud seeding, but we're requesting $5 million to expand the program from the seven areas where we're doing it now to 10 areas, and we like what we're seeing so far, and we hope that it will continue to add to the snowpack as we move forward.
All right, James, thanks for your call. Next listener, Governor, says, how are we protecting the water that we've received this year? They know that we're We're not going to be out of the drought. But what is planned for this year in terms of water savings?
Yeah. So again, we're very excited. Our reservoir systems are set up in such a way to capture that water and make sure that we're storing it, again, for future use. And of course, one of the things that has changed, though, was historically we didn't want that water to go into the Great Salt Lake. We wanted to use it for other things. But we changed that last year. So more of that water will actually be going into the Great Salt Lake. And we are just so fortunate for the people that came before us that sacrificed so much and understood how important it was to build these systems of reservoirs. Really fascinating to hear the California governor just a week ago talking about how they needed to do more in water storage and actually looking at the design that we have here so that California can do more. They'd have had an incredible winter, even better than we are, which is good. All of the upper basin and lower basin, Colorado River Basin states that are doing so well will help all of us. It will help with the bigger reservoir system, Lake Powell and Lake Mead specifically, that have been struggling so much. We need many more winters like this one, but this is the honestly, if I could have written my dream scenario, it would have played out exactly like it has until now. Now, what's interesting, most people may not know this, but March, April, and May are the wettest months of the year in Utah. So January is not supposed to be like this. December was not supposed to be like this. So it's kind of all gravy now. And I'm certainly hopeful that that February will get us some snow. February is usually a drier month, but then we'll really hit it hard in March and April and build up the rest of that snowpack.
Brian in Woods Cross also wants to talk about the Great Salt Lake. Good afternoon, Brian. What is your question?
Hi. Yeah, it sounds like this is a big topic today. I'm just wondering, there have been a lot of options put forth for rejuvenating the Great Salt Lake, a pipeline from the Pacific, which is a non-starter, and drilling deep wells, et cetera. But I'm wondering if you have had anyone present the options for bringing water from the Snake River down. It would be a lot shorter, not nearly the elevation change, could be done in the wintertime when they don't need the water, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of really good possibilities there. And just wondering if you'd had anybody look at that. I even have a synopsis written up that I could send to somebody if you were interested, but just wondering what you had heard.
Yeah, Brian, thank you. And again, please feel free to send that to my office. You can go to my website and get the email address there. You can send it over to the Department of Natural Resources. We love hearing from people and their ideas. I can tell you that the answer is yes, we have had some of those conversations. We those are conversations that are happening broadly with different states. Now, again, there are water rights at issue, and most places aren't excited to give up their water, but I do think that as a nation, these are kind of the long-term conversations that we need to have. We know as climate changes that different parts of the country are going to be affected differently. And this is always cyclical. It's been that way for a long time. It always surprises people to learn that the Great Salt Lake was about at the level it is right now that we've gone up about a foot, in 1964. And I went back and looked in the newspapers back in 1964 to see what people were doing and how worried they were about the Great Salt Lake, and we couldn't find anything of people worried about the Great Salt Lake. So certainly that has changed. What we do know, again, is in 1983, 1984, we were flooding, and we would have loved to send some of our water to some of the other drier parts of the country. And so there is a broader discussion about what a system of pipelines for water might look like and how that could react. But certainly looking at, looking north, where it would be much easier for us to get some water than going to the Pacific Ocean, the Snake River. Of course, we've got the Great Lakes, the Mississippi River, which is running very dry right now as well. So lots of different discussions happening, and those are 20-year discussions, and we would need some federal input to make that happen. But I'd love to hear your ideas.
All right, Governor, we have just a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour news. I'm going to try and squeeze in Mindy from Draper here. And good afternoon, Mindy. What was your question?
Just interested to hear you explain how you feel like it's more kind to youth who want to transgender to transition at such a young age, where they, there have been studies found that youth who transition are not any less likely to commit suicide than those who never have the operation. also in transgender sports, how it's kind to those who have someone of the opposite sex, say a male competing against a female in a sport. How is it more kind to those who are competing against them? I feel like it's a very one-sided approach that's maybe really short-sighted for long-term health of these youth that are being allowed to transgender. So I'd love to hear you explain your position on that.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mindy. And apparently you don't understand my position. My position on the first piece of that was very clear, that that we're looking at, and that's the exact thing, doing the studies to figure out, make sure that we're not doing any long-term damage. And that's why I said that I was not vetoing the bill. That was the question that was asked. On the second one, it sounds like, unfortunately, you also didn't read the 5 pages that I wrote about this last year, and I would encourage you to do that. You can still go find that, and it will explain exactly my reasoning behind that. And it wasn't, I was not advocating for biological males to be participating in sports, taking opportunities away from girls in sports. That's not what I was arguing at all. In fact, it was the exact opposite of that. But what happened last year was very unique and very different, and that is that we were working with everyone on something that would prevent that from happening, but do it in a very respectful way. And on the very last night of the session, with about an hour left in the session, there was another bill that came out of nowhere that didn't have a hearing, didn't have any input, and that's the wrong way to do this. So you're making arguments for me that I've never made. I didn't say that there was anything kind about those other things as well, but we can do these things in a respectful way, and that hasn't always been the case. And so I hope that we can all be better about that, treating people who are different than us with love and respect, trying to understand how difficult it is for them, and especially when they are mistreated. That's what I'm worried about, and that is happening far more often than the things that you're accusing me of being in support of.
All right, Mindy, thanks for your call. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We have a couple people on the lines, but the number for you to call with your question, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your question at 57500. Matt is in Farmington. Good afternoon, Matt. What is your question?
Good afternoon, Governor. Thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to the I-15 expansion project and how it affects residents of Farmington in particular. Of the three current options, two of them in particular could have a large negative impact on neighborhoods and residents in Farmington. What power do you have as governor to help make sure UDOT hears our concerns and takes responsibility for the impact that they make on dozens of homes that could be demolished of the expansion or during the expansion?
Yeah, Matt. Thank you for your concern, and I've heard from people of Farmington. So to directly answer your question is, I do have some ability to let UDOT know how important this is, and to make sure your voice is heard. But I want to talk a little bit about the process that we go through, and there's a reason we go through this process, and it really is. I know it's easy for people to be cynical, and sometimes I'm cynical to think it's already baked, or people have already made a decision, and none of this matters. And I want to assure you that is not the case. Like your feedback really does matter. So right now we are in the environmental impact study phase of the I-15 expansion. So you mentioned that UDOT does have multiple alternatives along the I-15 corridor and in the surrounding communities. I can promise you none of these have been decided yet. It's not like, oh, well, let's throw this other one in. We know what we're going to do. That's just not the case. For those that haven't seen it, you can go to I-15 15eis.u.utah.gov, and or just go to UDOT's website and you can search there and be able to find it. So they've UDOT's already held extensive discussions on the EIS with Utah residents. They've heard from people like you, Matt. I hope you've been able to attend some of those or to file your statement with them. They've talked to local governments, businesses, residents, other stakeholders, and the department will continue these discussions as they prepare what's then called a draft EIS for public release. Now, once that draft is released, UDOT will then hold another 45-day public comment period. So you'll get another opportunity to weigh in before they make a final decision. And we will then consider and respond to those comments and make potentially necessary revisions. So in short, we're really at the beginning of that process. Nothing is set in stone. And the public will have lots of opportunities to continue to weigh in there. And I've already, Matt, let them know that this is something people are concerned about. And I will make sure that that process is followed through to the T.
All right, Governor, while we're on the topic of roads, we do have a listener who's concerned about Highway 6 and is asking if you have any plans to fix Highway 6 or make it safer or increase patrolling by UHP. They say it seems more and more wrecks are happening and causing it to be shut down, and this is a major roadway for people of rural eastern Utah.
Yeah, it is. I'm very familiar with Highway 6. In fact, for most of my life, I mean, for 7 years,
route,
I traveled
yes.
Yeah, the first 10 miles of Highway 6 every day for 7.5 years. And it used to be back in the 80s, people will remember that it was famous as being the most dangerous highway in the United States. Now, the good news is there have been significant changes made to Highway 6 to make it safer. And though that dangerous highway statistic has gone down significantly, but we're not there yet. We do have projects, multiple projects that are happening on Highway 6, and those will certainly continue. We'll continue to work with UDOT to make it safer. Every accident that happens there, we review those accidents, and it gives us a chance to look at things and figure out if there's a better way, a better design. You also mentioned speed being part of that, and certainly we're looking always at where we have speeding happening the most and how we can make it safer. I will just say this, that when you have a winter like this where there is significantly more snow than we're used to having or have had in the past, we do see accidents go up, unfortunately, and sadly some tragic accidents. But the answer is yes, it is one of the highways that we are focused on as a state, and as funds become available, we'll continue to invest in there.
All right, Krista is on the line in Lehigh. Good afternoon, Krista. What is your question?
So I am just wondering what legislation in this session you're supporting that addresses the housing crisis in Utah, and if there's any upcoming legislation on increasing taxes or even limiting the number of short-term rentals here in the state that exacerbate our housing issues.
Yeah, thanks for that question. In fact, Krista, it's one of the things that I'm going to be talking about tonight in my State of the State address, but I'm happy to answer it here. The answer is yes. We've been working all year on a couple significant pieces of legislation, and we're still kind of putting the final touches on that. I'm hoping it will be out next week. I talked to one of the bill sponsors last night and said it was coming. Two things. One, and I say this all the time, but I think it bears repeating, and that is that this is really simple economics, and you understand that by the tone of your question. If we want housing prices to come down, we just need more housing, and so both of these bills will be focused on how to get more housing. One of them is focused on infrastructure, because we have buildable lots right now where building is not happening because we don't have infrastructure, so water lines, sewer lines, those types of things, and how can we help make that more affordable. So that's one piece. The second one is the role the government has in making housing more expensive. The time it takes for us to get approvals, the different fees that are put on building lots, all of those things we're looking at, trying to figure out how we can reduce the price of housing. Now, at the end of your question, you brought up the short-term rental piece of that. This is something I worked on last year, and unfortunately, I didn't get enough support in the legislature to do something around that. Right now, I can tell you our latest estimates, some good news. We've gone from from a shortage of about 46,000 units to a shortage of about 30,000 units, but that's still a shortage of 30,000 units. Right now, we think we have about 25,000 short-term rentals, and so I'm a private property rights person. I think people should be able to decide what they want to do with their property. The problem that we're facing, though, is when you start turning our housing into hotels, that limits the amount of housing that's available for our kids and grandkids. And so we may have swung the pendulum just a little too far. We used to have some regulations around short-term rentals. We got rid of most of those. Still looking at that and trying to find the right balance.
All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, Ken and James, you'll be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for this final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. Let's go right back to the phone lines. Ken is in Camas, and good afternoon, Ken. What is your question?
Yes, Governor, thank you for doing this program. Let me preface my question. I think that if every Republican legislator had the temperament and instincts that you have, I probably wouldn't have to ask this question. But Republicans seem to care so much about parental and individual rights when it comes to things like censoring books and, having scientifically proven vaccines, like the COVID vaccines not mandated in schools. But they seem to care little for the parental rights of parents, unlike you and I, who have children, that suffer, with gender dysphoria, that are transgender, and that are seeking, medical treatments, in order to resolve or deal with those issues so that those kids don't end up in the morgue because of suicide. And, it's apparent that this legislature is hell-bent, on taking away those parental rights. And I just don't understand the gross inconsistencies within, your party, the party of Trump.
Yeah, thank you for the question, and I think it's a valid question. I think it's a question that deserves discussion. I would tell you that someone on the other side of it might say, "Well, it's really interesting that Democrats seem to care a lot about what happens, except when it comes to this one." Then suddenly Democrats care about parental rights and responsibilities. I think you can see the hypocrisy on both sides of this, and sadly we live in a nation where politics is very hypocritical. There's no question about it. But that's why, again, I'm trying. And I believe there are certainly some in my party that are hypocritical on this issue. I do believe that there are others in my party, and I think Senator Kennedy is one of those, who is really intentional. And I think if you listen to that hearing yesterday, he is very thoughtful and very intentional about trying to do the right thing, trying to make sure that there is no long-term harm. We do make decisions for better or worse all the time about kids and what they can and can't do. We don't let kids smoke because we've decided as a nation that would cause long-term harm and that would not be good for them, and that's not a decision they should be able to make until they are older. And we're not even going to let the parents make that decision, right? And so the counter argument here is that this is a decision when you're talking about radical decisions that will have long-term consequences. We should make sure that we are getting this right, and that's why Senator Kennedy's bill is a pause. It's a pause until we have better data, better understanding of what is happening out there. And I will say, I mean, there are New York Times articles about this. This is not just a Utah thing. It is not just a Republican thing, although you are correct to say that it has certainly become a culture war thing. But there are well-meaning scientists and researchers on both the right and the left who are really concerned about this. And so I don't think it's fair to say that everyone who believes that we should push pause and make sure we're not doing any long-term damage is a hypocrite. I do think that there is some of that, but I think it's a misnomer to believe it's everyone.
All right, let's go to our next caller, and that would be James in Clinton. And good afternoon, James. What is your question?
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call today. This question is for the future presidential elections. I'm sorry it's so off key to what everybody was talking about today, but I was hoping to put a seed into your mind of thinking about maybe running for vice president with Boyd Matheson running as president. What are your thoughts on that, Governor?
Well, thank you, James.
Did anyone ask Boyd?
I'll tell Boyd and see what he's thinking and make sure he's ready to go. No, look, I get asked all the time, you know, who are you supporting for president? And I hate even talking about it because it's still so early. But I'm always partial to governors. I think I like governors just because they've had executive experience. We've seen some of our best presidents, I think, in the country have been former governors, and we have a couple governors on the right that are interesting or interested in my party. Certainly, Governor DeSantis, I think, is getting the most attention, the most support. I was with him a few weeks ago down in Florida. We had a wonderful discussion. I really like Governor DeSantis. I think if you watch some of the things he was able to do during the hurricanes, the way he responded, I thought was very presidential. He was able to do things that were incredible. Some of the roads they built that should have taken months and years, they were able to do in weeks. Just really impressed with the way he stepped up during those disasters. Governor Youngkin from Virginia is somebody I also like. Wonderful person, great business background, really smart, and just gets this stuff. And I think there will be other governors. I think right now there's probably five or six governors that are looking at it, and I'm very interested in them. And I can assure you that I will not be involved as far as running for a presidential spot or a vice presidential spot.
All right, let's go to the next caller. Get as many callers in as we can. Lisa is in Heber. Good afternoon, Lisa. What's your question?
Hello. Nothing political. I live in Heber City and the beautiful state of Utah, and I don't understand the process as to why we don't have recycling going on in every community in Utah. And I know there are maybe small places I can take my recycling, but I'm used to having a garbage can and a recycle can, and I don't have that in our community. Why priority for every town?
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for the question. And again, I can't speak for every city and town. You're right that those are local decisions. I can tell you that as a former mayor and a former city councilman, that every community has financial considerations and constraints. Unfortunately, and this will come as a surprise to many of you, when recycling was really taking off years ago and we had big recycling programs, most people don't know that recycling and that material was going mostly to China, where it was being processed in China and then coming back to the United States or being used in manufacturing over there. Several years ago, that market dried up. The Chinese stopped doing that. It became incredibly expensive. And this is sad to say, but many recycling programs in the United States, they kept the recycling program going, but then they would just go put it in the landfill because it was too expensive to actually recycle it. There was no money in that. Now, what I do know is happening, we're starting to see some of that industry come back to the United States. We're starting to see more of these recycling processing facilities in the United States, which will lower the cost and make it profitable again to actually do that. And I suspect that we'll see those programs pick up in the years to come.
Okay, let's see if we can squeeze Jerry in here from Bluffdale. Jerry, go ahead. You have 2 minutes. What's your question?
Representing the Great Salt Lake water issue, when you can go to Summit, Wasatch, Weber County, and they're building these multi-million-dollar subdivisions, you know, $3 million to $12 million, with all of them having private golf courses that the public can't use anyway. And they're just putting massive amounts of water that should have been going to, like, Jordanelle, Deer Creek, Utah Lake, and then into the Great Salt Lake. But instead, they're capturing the water for the ultra-rich, just to have their playground up there so they can golf and ski. Just wondering why we're wasting that water.
Well, thank you for the question. Again, water rights is really important, and people they're called water rights for a reason, not water contributions or water, you know, whatever you want to do with it, but water rights. And so people have those rights, and they're able to use that water for the purposes that they desire, and that's really important in a functioning society, that we're able to have those rights. Now, what I will say is that we're trying to add more transparency. I think there's a bill in the legislature this year that would require golf courses to share the amount of water that they're using. There are ways to make golf courses much more efficient so they can significantly reduce the amount of water that they're using. And then, of course, on the agriculture side as well, we're working on significant contributions that will improve, reduce the amount of water we're using in farming and improve outcomes. And I think we're going to end up in a much better place.
Governor, thanks for always being willing to come in and answer questions from our listeners. We have about 20 seconds left. State of the Union tonight, 6 o'clock.
Please join us. I hope it's worth your time. I think it really will be.
Okay, thank you again.
Thanks, Maria.
And you can hear the governor's State of the Union address right here on KSL News Radio.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.